Hey, this is Jeff East, young Clark Kent from the movie Superman, and you're listening to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life.
Hello, my fellow comic book fans. Welcome to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. I'm your host, Joe Stuber. Come right on into the cozy confines of the Comic Book Central lair. Kick off your shoes. Stay a little while. Today, I'm rolling out the welcome mat for a very special guest. He's an actor who appeared in my all-time favorite comic book movie, maybe it's yours as well, 1978's Superman the Movie. As I mentioned on the last episode, it has been way too long since I visited this film here on Comic Book Central. So I thought it was high time to speak to another fantastic cast member. All right, before we get started today, I just want to say, if you want to know more about this classic film, I'm going to direct you to a few places. I'll mention them again at the end of the show as well. So take note of these if you want to learn more about Superman the movie. It is a fantastic film. First, of course, you're already here. It's Comic Book Central. We've got a lot of new listeners lately. Thanks, everybody, for joining in. So you might not have had a chance to check out my Superman the Movie episodes if you are a new listener. Be sure to check out my in-depth interviews with executive producer Ilya Salkind on episode 3. We've got the actor who played the Kryptonian villain Non, Jack O'Halloran. He was in episode 4. And in episode 28, Mark McClure, who played Jimmy Olsen, he joined me to talk about the film as well. So be sure you've downloaded and listened to those interviews. Had a lot of fun bringing those to you. Something else you're going to want to check out. Obviously, the Blu-ray and DVD of Superman the Movie, but specifically the commentary tracks. You've got Ilya Salkind and producer Pierre Spengler on one disc, director Richard Donner and screenwriter Tom Mankiewicz on another disc. I know those discs are in the box set with all of the Superman films together. I'm not certain they're in the standalone discs. So you're going to want to check that out before purchasing them. But, of course, I highly recommend the box set regardless. Also, one of my favorite books of all time, The Making of Superman, the movie written by David Petrow. It's out of print, but I've seen some copies on eBay. You might be able to find it at your local library if you can get your hands on it. I highly, highly recommend this book. My copy has been read so many times, I'm not kidding you, it's pretty much disintegrated at this point. It's definitely broken in half. I've got to glue it back together. But it is such an amazing read. I read it over and over and over again. It's probably time for me to hit eBay and get one as well. So the last thing I want to mention, if you want some information about Superman the movie, capewonder.com. Check out that website. The creator and editor of that site, Jim Bowers, he has amassed an incredible treasure trove from the Christopher Reeve era Superman movies. Pictures, sounds, videos, stories, links, interviews, you name it, it's all there. You're going to hear Jim's name mentioned a little bit later in today's show. It's regarding a special event that's coming up, so you're going to want to pay close attention to that as well. All right, there you have it. You're all fixed up. You've got some great behind-the-scenes facts about Superman. You know where to get those. You're going to get even more behind-the-scenes facts from the man who played young Clark Kent in the classic tale of Kal-El today. I'm going to be joined by Jeff East. Jeff East began his acting career at the age of 14 when he got the role of Huckleberry Finn in the 1973 musical Tom Sawyer. The following year, Jeff reprised the role and got star billing for the sequel, Huckleberry Finn. Not long after, the producers of the film Superman the Movie were looking for a young actor to portray the character of Clark Kent. Now, this wasn't the tights-wearing superhero part of Clark Kent, no. This was Clark Kent coming of age. The Clark that was pining over Lana Lang, learning to come to grips with the strange powers that he possessed, and getting some great parental advice from Hollywood legends Phyllis Thaxter and Glenn Ford as Ma and Pa Kent.
Yeah, I know. You can do all these amazing things, and sometimes you think that you will just go bust unless you can tell people about it, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, every time I get the football, I can make a touchdown.
That's for sure.
Every time.
Yeah.
I mean, is it showing off and somebody's doing the things he's capable of doing?
No.
Is a bird showing off when it flies?
No. No, now you listen to me. When you first came to us, we thought that people would come and take you away because when they found out, you know, the things you could do, and that worried us a lot. But then a man gets older and he thinks very differently and things get very clear. And there's one thing I do know, son, and that is you are here for a reason. I don't know whose reason, whatever the reason is, you know, maybe it's because... I don't know. But I do know one thing. It's not to score touchdowns.
Huh? Thanks, Dad.
It has been a while since I did a Superman-themed episode of Comic Book Central. It's been even longer since we focused on, in my opinion, the greatest comic book movie of all time. It's 1978's Superman the Movie. Joining me on the show today is the actor who got to bring young Clark Kent to life. He is faster than a speeding locomotive. He is Jeff East. Bonjour, Monsieur East.
Bonjour. Comment ça va, my friend Joe?
Bienvenue et comique livre central.
Did
I get that
right?
Am I even close on that?
You're close.
Okay. For our listeners, I'm talking to you. You're in France.
Yes, I am.
You're in Nice,
I married
France?
A French girl, and I live in Nice, France. And they have a lot of Superman fans here, believe it or not.
I do believe it. He's international. He's universal. He's amazing. And you're a part of that world. It's interesting. I read an interview with you probably, I'm guessing, around the time of Tom Sawyer and Huck Finn. Must have been one of these like Teeny Bop magazines or something. I think you're 16 years old. You said in the interview you wanted to go to the French Riviera, swim, and lie around in the sun.
Yeah.
You
and
did
it.
That's
where I ended up.
Was that just like one of those lines that like handlers were feeding you, or did you like actually as a teenager like think I'm going to go to France?
I actually believed that that's what was going to happen with me in my life, and this is so strange. My manager and my agent, they never fed me anything. They were saying, just be yourself because you're going to be really popular. Just be yourself and don't be a jerk. And I go, well, I want to live in the south of France.
Well, and there are a couple little moments in there that are very teenage comments. So it's interesting. They said it, but they just let you go. Sometimes they just, they'll like, here's a list of things to say, you know, and there's
it's such a weird, you know, it's funny, Joe. It's really a weird thing to be a teen actor or teen singer or teen idol or whatever it was. And I was just literally dumped into the whole world of that. And I never took it seriously, but my managers and my agent says, well, you got to do the publicity and you've got to talk to these magazines and they're going to take these really stupid pictures of you and your friends in high school are going to make fun of you. And I go, well, I don't want that to happen.
Yeah.
They said you have to do it to sell tickets.
Well, I think it worked. Now, you got into acting at an early age, but you didn't – that wasn't – initially what you're thinking of. Were you initially thinking a career in a legal career?
Yeah, I wanted to be a lawyer.
Okay.
Well, actually, my grandmother wanted me to be president of the United States.
Okay, well, yeah.
Yeah,
sure,
and
why not?
I thought, well, every grandmother wants their, you know, grandchild to be president of the United States. And I thought, well, I started learning about it in school, and I thought, I'm not sure I want this job. And then I started singing and I started a band and my sister got me involved in acting. And I decided, well, you know, I can communicate with people as an actor and I get a spontaneous reaction from them. I think that's more interesting. And so I started out as a young child and then a young teenager. And then this movie came by, Tom Sawyer, and they shot it in my home state. And they said, God, that guy could be Huckleberry Finn. And they picked me out of all these thousands of kids that they interviewed. And I thought, well, how weird. This is really what I want to do. So, yeah, I can do this part. And I did it. And it was fun. And it was a natural combustion. I don't know how to describe it other than that.
What was the casting process like? Because this was a pretty huge... production. You mentioned thousands.
Yeah.
I mean, how was that when you went in and how did you find out about it?
I've been told by the powers to be, Frank Capra Jr., Robert Greenhut, Arthur Jacobs, and Ross Brown went across the entire United States and interviewed over 10,000 boys and girls for this role.
10,000?
10,000. And it took them about, I think, 6 months. They actually had an audition period of 6 months. And I was like, I was called in because my mom's best friend lived next door. She was an actress in Kansas City, and she knew that I had a band, and I was like in eighth grade, and I was doing this music thing. And they called her and said, do you know any kids in the Kansas City area? Because I lived in Kansas City, Missouri, which is where the whole thing takes place, in Missouri. I happened to be a Missouri kid. She said, this kid next door is got the biggest ham I've ever met. You ought to meet him. So they called me and they said, we want you to come down and audition for this movie. And I went, well, what movie are you talking about? And they said, Tom Sawyer. And I'm like, yeah, right. So I go down there. There's 5,000 kids and people standing in line to get this audition. Wow.
That's like the American Idol of its day. I mean, that's almost like the casting.
Oh, it was totally American Idol.
And you got
totally.
It.
Totally. And I got the part.
Wow. Did they say, like, what was it that they're like, that kid, that's the one we like, what did you do or did you
ever
find
out? Well, they kept acting like they didn't like me. They kept acting like they're like, that kid's interesting, but I don't think he can do it. I don't think he can act. I've had him read for me and he's dreadful. And then the director met me. And all of a sudden, they're calling my mom, and they're going, hey, we want to fly your kid out to California and test him. And my mom goes, oh, bullshit, and she hung up the phone.
Really?
And
oh, mom.
They literally called back twice. And, yo, yeah. And Ross Brown, the casting director, said, Mrs. East, this is not BS. We're really wanting to fly Jeff out tomorrow. For Tom Sawyer, we were interested in him in playing one of the roles. And she goes, I don't believe it. His dad's not around. He's on traveling with his company, and we can't answer your questions. So she calls my godfather and says, what do you think about sending Jeff out on an airplane tomorrow by himself to Hollywood because they want to test him for Tom Sawyer? And my godfather says, God, at least you get rid of him for a couple of days.
And what's the worst that could happen? You become an actor and you take care of mom.
And the worst thing that happened is I became an actor.
Oh, man.
And it was weird, dude. It was really weird.
And
but
these aren't
I
like little.
Loved it.
Yeah, these aren't independent films we're talking about. I mean, these are big, lavish MGM musicals. What I thought was interesting on Tom Sawyer, score by John Williams.
Oh, yeah. That's the first person I met when I was cast in the role. The first person I actually met with was John Williams, Robert and Richard Sherman, and Arthur Jacobs. And we were all sitting in a studio singing songs together. They're testing my vocal cords, and I'm like, really? And Richard and Robert Sherman are going, well, you got a little bit of a crooner going for you. And I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, well, you know, Sinatra really wasn't that great of a singer. And Elvis Presley isn't all that great of a singer. And I'm like, what? And these guys are the geniuses of Hollywood. I had no idea what they were talking about. I just put it out there. And they go, well, I think we can make this work. And John Williams, really nice man. Richard and Robert Sherman, incredible people. Just going, we love his spirit. Let's just work with it. And I started singing, and Johnny Whitaker was there, and we were all doing our thing. And then we started getting into the role, and we started doing the whole movie, and it was an incredible experience. Incredible.
Man, and so successful, they brought you back for Huck Finn the following year. And working with the great Harvey Korman, Paul Winfield, who we remember from Star Trek II. What did you pick up from these folks that were out? Because you're at this point at such a young age, you're already working with some heavy hitters.
Yep, heavy hitters. And you know, I started realizing, okay, now I'm in Hollywood. This is a Hollywood thing. And I drank it all in, and I thought, ooh, this is really interesting. had no idea this is what my life was going to be, but it was. And I had a really inspirational manager and agent at the time, and was very constructive in keeping me centered and keeping me, you know, focused on what I needed to do. But there was a lot of pressure, and my parents were very good Midwestern parents, and you know, they just kept reminding me, don't get a big head, Jeff. Don't let this get to you. And I kept saying, I'm not going to change. And I didn't. But I said, you can't stop the force of maturity. You can't stop the force of experience. And I experienced so much and learned so much from Harvey Korman, from David Wayne, from Paul Winfield. I'll tell you what I learned from Paul Winfield, which is one of the things I want to talk about. It's about racism. And it's really strange, but I was not raised in a racist family. I was not raised in a, you know, typical Southern family. I was from Missouri, which is the South. Nobody talked indifferent about anybody. We were all who we are. It was a melting pot of a neighborhood that I grew up in. All my friends were Italians, Black, Italian, Jewish. And when I get down to Mississippi in 1973, and I'm playing the lead role in Huckleberry Finn, and the NAACP is down there, all these people are putting pressure on this production company, and we go to this motel called the Prentice Motel in Natchez, Mississippi. It's the first day I arrive at the hotel. The first day, I'm 15 years old. I'm there with my brother, who's my guardian, and we're going in, and they're telling me that Paul Winfield, who's playing Jim, who I just drove in from the Baton Rouge airport, cannot eat in the restaurant because he's Black.
Are you saying, wow.
Yeah.
And one of the stars, of the film.
The Academy Award nominee. He was an Academy Award nominated actor, my friend.
Yeah, a whole different time.
That doesn't make him any better than anybody else. But seriously, the people of the Natchez freaking Prentice Motel said, that man's not allowed to eat in here.
Yeah, well, that's a huge wake-up call, too, I think, for you probably got a big history lesson then, too, at such a young age at that point.
And I learned then about racism. I learned about Hollywood. I learned about how brilliant Harvey Korman is. I learned about how brilliant Paul Winfield is. I learned about how brilliant it was to work with Laszlo Kovacs and all these great people. And I was the star of the movie. I had a lot of pressure on me, but I didn't care because I was like, hey, you know, I am who you hired. You guys like me. Everybody likes me. So let's do it.
Well,
let's get it on.
That's the great part about this is you're surrounded by all these like mega talents. And so you're absorbing all that in at such a young age. That takes you right into, my goodness, the cast. A few years later, mom didn't hang up the phone when producers of Superman came calling, did she?
No.
Okay.
No, that was.
I mean,
that actually
that one she believed, right?
That was after I'd moved out of the house.
Okay.
I was going.
You're
to
taking
UCLA.
Your own calls at this point. Mom can't feel
and
the
I
calls.
I had an agent, and they were submitting me for stuff. And,
wow.
That actually happened. Richard Donner called the editor of a movie that I was doing called The Hazing. And they were working on a film called The Omen. And she said, what are you getting ready to work on, Dick? And he goes, I'm getting ready to work on Superman. And she goes, oh, really? And she goes, yeah, we're looking for a guy to play the young Superman. And she said, you got to take a look at this guy, Jeff East. He's the star of this movie, and he might fit the protocol for the young Superman. And not many people knew about the role of the young Clark Kent. And then all of a sudden they had me come in for this audition, and I thought I was auditioning for Jimmy Olsen or whatever it may be. And Dick Donner pulls me aside, and Pierre Spangler and Ilya Salkin are in the room, and they're looking at me, and they're taking my photograph, and they're matching it up with some other actor's photograph. And I go, who's that? And they go, that's Christopher Reeve. And I go, oh, and they're looking at the photographs and they're comparing my face and they're looking at this and they're going, you got a passport? And I go, yeah. And he said, well, is it valid? I go, yeah. And he goes, you're flying to London tomorrow. You're going to be making Superman.
Wow.
I'm like, oh, right. For what role? He says, young Clark Kent. So they gave me the script. They made me go in another room and read it and come back and tell them what I thought of it. I did.
Now, did you get the whole script or your
small? The whole script.
Wow.
The whole script.
Okay.
Read it. Came back a couple hours later. Knocked on their door and they said, oh, come on back. Come back. It was like a huge casting session. They were in there for hours. Come back in. They go, what do you think of the script? And I go, do I have to wear a suit? And Donner goes, no. You're the human, Hugh. You're the human side of this. And I go, you're asking me what I thought of the script. I said, Mario Puzo wrote it. One of my favorite movies is Godfather. Why would you ask me, an actor, what I thought of the script? Are you kidding me? They go, well, what about the young Clark Kent parts? Did you read it? I said, yeah, it's great. What do you want me to do?
Where do I sign?
And they go, you're on an airplane tomorrow.
Wow. Now, had you...
That's exactly how it went down.
What was your background with the character? Like, I mean, did you read comic books? Did you like Superman? Did you know about Superman?
Loved George Reeves and Superman, the TV show. I loved that. Never read comic books. Never. I was too busy trying to chase girls and ride motorcycles. And
you're in a band.
Know, smoking Marlboro cigarettes in the cornfield and being Huckleberry Finn. I was Huck Finn. I was not interested in reading comic books.
Okay, but you knew the show. I mean, you got the whole character.
George Reed. I love Superman, yeah. The TV show.
And Noelle Neal, who we'll talk about here in a little bit. You got a chance to talk to her as well. I had a chance to talk to one of your co-stars in the Smallville scenes, Diane Sherry.
I love Diane.
Yeah, she played Lana Lang. I said, hey, throw me some questions I can talk to Jeff about. She asked, what else did you do when you were in Canada waiting for weeks for the right lighting to shoot?
Well, she likes to smoke Marlboro Light cigarettes, I can tell you that.
Okay.
We figured out a way to go, because we were smoking, we were actors, we were really cool then, and everybody was, you know, smoking cigarettes, but where could you get a pack of Marlboro Lights in Canada? It was hard to do. And I was going back and forth to the United States to interview for other movies and all that stuff. And they're all stuck in Calgary. So we were always making a bet was, can you bring me back some cigarettes? And I'm like, yeah, no problem. It was kind of a weird law back then with Canada and the United States. You could buy Cuban products in Canada, and you couldn't buy them in America. And Gene Hackman's brother and I were constantly taking cigars over from Calgary. And because I was constantly going back to L.A. because we would shoot for a couple of days and then I would be off for 10 days. So we'd fly back to Los Angeles and do our thing. But there was this thing with Canada. I felt like we were drug dealers, you know, we were like sneaking cigars and
over the border.
Over from. Yeah, from the border, man.
Didn't you read the part of the script where it says he doesn't drink, doesn't smoke, and tells the truth?
Oh.
You missed that part.
That wasn't me.
Yeah, that was later. You were the human side.
I was the human side.
Glenn Ford
of Superman.
Taught you well later after that. You remembered his morals. So, and you, I saw in another interview you mentioned that you had, I don't know if you were being flip or if you were being cute about it, you said you had a fling with Lana.
Yeah.
Okay, so did you guys date when you were shooting the movie? Okay.
Yeah.
So Clark Kent did get the girl.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, what happened was, it's really funny.
You guys must have had a lot of time in between shots.
She's a darling girl. And we actually became good friends. And she had a boyfriend in Los Angeles.
Oh, no. I don't know if I like where this is going.
Jealous. Yeah. And, of course, she had to tell him, I'm dating Superman. And that became rather rather agitating to this young man in Los Angeles. So he decided to fly up to Calgary. And the assistant directors were told by the director, Dick Donner, that you need to hide Jeff out for a few days. Because he's starring in my movie, and I don't want him to have any black eyes over a girl.
Not in the face. Actors, not in the face.
That really happened.
Oh, man. And you never were confronted by the boyfriend, were you?
No, I never met the guy.
They hid you.
Never met him, and I feel bad. I really, that whole thing kind of fell apart after that with her, and she's a darling girl. And but it was really funny. It happened the night that we were supposed to shoot the Wheatfield scenes with Phyllis Thaxter. And I remember I had to stay up all night because I had no room to stay in because I'm being threatened by this stuff boyfriend from L.A. And I had to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to shoot this scene because it's at sunrise and they had to put my makeup on, which takes 3 hours. So I got no sleep, none. And the assistant directors are like my buddies, and we were hanging out, and we were talking all night long, and they were all laughing about how stupid this whole thing was. And then I go out to the Wheatfield scene, and we do these Wheatfield shots, which are iconic in the movie. And the whole thing worked because I was so friggin' tired. Emotionally, everything came together.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really weird.
Because yeah, I mean, that's the part, is it? You're drained emotionally.
I was
just,
drained, man.
You gotta leave your
home.
I was so drained. Wow.
I had to leave my mom.
Method
my
acting.
My father has passed away. That was method acting in its truest sense.
There's a boyfriend truest after sense. You. You can't find the cigarettes. What's
I'm
going
to get killed when I go back to the hotel.
Oh, man. Is she
How
also?
How far are you going, son? I don't know. I may not be around, Ma.
North, way far north,
north,
away from everything.
Really far north, away from this friggin' place.
You could not wait to get to the Fortress of Solitude.
But that's exactly what happened. And there's not many people know that story.
She also asked, who drove the dressing rooms?
Oh, God. Oh, man. We had these drivers that were cowboys from the Calgary Stampede. And they were literally rodeo cowboys. And these guys were nuts. And anything goes with the Winnebagoes. So we had these balloon fights, and we had these with Donner and Valerie Perrine, Gene Hackman. All of us had these. We had loaded up with balloons with water in them and had water balloon fights between each Winnebago on the way back into Calgary from the set. Wow. It was nuts. It was like total high school. And, you know, it's funny, Animal House had just come out that year that we shot this movie. And I remember seeing Animal House going, God, that's just like making movies Superman. It was total Animal House on that set. Valerie Perrine, Gene Hackman, they were just cards. Everybody was joking around with each other. Donner is the greatest director I ever worked with. Honest to God, he's such a cool guy. And he's so much fun. And he made everybody so comfortable. And it was like a big family. And it was one of the best experiences I've ever had as an actor.
What did he do as a director? All the performances are believable. Everybody brings it. How did he get that out of everyone? I mean, obviously he's surrounding himself with talented folks. But what did he do as a director that allowed you to bring those iconic scenes to life?
God, that's such a great question. Donner's the kind of guy... you actually feel like he's your friend. And when he tells you to do something, you do it. And when he looks at you and says, I know this is in you, you know you got it in you. So he actually, it is the most amazing thing that a director can do that and pull that out of an actor. But he actually makes you feel comfortable with yourself. That's all he does. That's his charm. He's charming. He's totally into the project. He's totally into the comic book idea of it. He was totally into, this is You know, I'll be really honest with you. He hired Glenn Ford and Phyllis Baxter for two reasons. One, take and get them the hell out of there. Because when we did those scenes, those people were so professional. And they, all they did, one take. We did one take with Glenn Ford and myself. Wow. Not 69 takes. One take.
So the whole thing walking up from the road, one thing I do know, son, is that is you are not here to score touchdown.
One,
I mean, wow.
One take.
That's amazing. I mean,
I know.
Well, and before I jump on, Pete, some of the listeners might be wondering too, like, why in the world is Lex Luthor and Miss Teschmacher there too? They were filming the truck sequences too up in Canada while you were shooting.
Yeah,
the small. Okay.
Yeah.
So I just want to throw that out there in case people are wondering, like, I don't remember Clark Kent.
They're filming all this stuff up there.
Yeah. And this was
filming part two and part one all at the same time.
Yeah. And this is kind of late in the production too, right?
What's that?
You're kind of like in the late end of the production too, your scenes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. This is sort of.
I was involved with the entire film. I was on it for a year.
Oh, wow.
Because the way they shot it, they were doing one and two together. And, okay, young Clark Kent's here for a couple of days and we're going to shoot these scenes. But it wasn't like days and days and days of shooting Glenn Ford and I walking up the road. We did it in one take.
Wow.
One day.
What were the conversations you had with the two of them as your parents in the movie and just knowing the Hollywood legacy that it's standing right in front of you?
Oh, it was, I'll tell you something. Both of them were so professional and so incredible to work with. And they were so grateful to even be involved in the project that I felt we all just, all these spirits came together at once. And that's why the movie works. And that's why those scenes work, because they're so gifted as actors. I mean, Glenn Ford, come on, man. Glenn Ford is, all he had to do was open his mouth and you believed him. Yeah. And Phyllis Thaxter, she just looked at you and you believed her and it's like, okay, that's all we need to do. And Donner knew that. That's why he hired him.
Wow.
And Donner pulled it all together. He had a great set. He had a great art director. He had a great cinematographer. Everything came together at once.
Yeah, let's mention two of those folks. Jeffrey Unsworth, cinematographer, and camera operator Peter McDonald, who went on to direct Rambo 3. I want to talk about that shot in the wheat field when you're saying goodbye to your mom. I mean, you watch the director commentary, and Donner's talking about how the camera's moving and panning against the move, and it's just like these crazy moves. But, oh, that scene. Talk about shooting that.
Well, Peter McDonald was very involved with the train sequence because of the fact that the wires that were holding me up when we were running for 2 weeks, and it took 2 weeks to shoot that. But he was saying to Donner, hey, I keep seeing the wires go in and out of the frame. As long as the filter is in place, I don't see the wires. But once Jeff moves a certain way, I see the wires. So they tried to figure out a way to not see the wires because they wanted to make it look like I was really running. And I really was running. I was literally hoisted by this tower of steel, and I was running against this train. And we were going 20 miles an hour, 30 miles an hour, 40 miles an hour. But all of a sudden,
yeah, you can't before you go. But you can't put too fine a point on this for the listeners now, even some of the younger listeners. I mean, everything now is CG. So if you need a train and you need a guy running by a train, you just put it in a computer.
We're doing it. Live. This is live.
This is in camera practical effects. If you need a guy running and jumping in front of a train, they made a guy run and jump in front of a train, right?
You got it.
Okay, go ahead. I just want to get that out there. That's you.
I'm running.
That's you being
a friggin' train.
Yes.
Even my manager and my agent said it's impossible.
Yeah.
And they're all going, this is stupid. You're going to ruin my actor. You're going to ruin my client. You're going to. What is going on?
And they swung you in front of the train too, right?
Oh yeah.
You're in. Okay. I don't know how this
happened. Dangerously.
Yeah.
Even Gene Hackman's brother, who was our stunt coordinator, was going, are you crazy? You're going to put this kid in front of a train? And they did. We did it backwards. We did it backwards. But I'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah.
My point is, Peter McDonald was such a genius that we're doing this scene where I'm just running against the train. And all he did was, he goes, I got an idea. And he took his finger, his index finger, and he smudged the lens of the camera with his index finger and oiled it up a little bit. You could not see the wires with his finger.
Wow.
True story. And if anybody tells you that's not true, they're full of crap. I was there.
You guys are making this up as you're there is unbelievable.
Yeah. Yes.
It's not fix it in post. It's shoot it in camera.
It was an effect thought up and delivered by all the effects guys from England who've done Star Wars, 2001 Space Odyssey, the most brilliant technicians in the world. And they're going, how are we going to make this kid run this train? How are we going to show this? How are we going to make Christopher Reeve fly? Peter McDonald smudged the filter on the, I swear to God, that's exactly how they did it.
That's great.
And then they eventually went back and colored each frame. Technicolor ended up painting all the frames so that you didn't see the wires. But we're all on wires. They were literally being hung by wires.
Yeah, you can see, there are shots online you can see where you're being hoisted up. And, I mean, the train's coming in and they're swinging you in front of it, right? Because you do the run and the jump in front of it and yell woohoo.
That's all done backwards. They had me on the other side of the tracks and I had to learn how to jump backwards. They hoisted me up. And the train would move backwards.
Okay.
And then when you show the film, it's forwards.
Okay.
It's an old trick.
So you're
an old Hollywood trick.
Okay. So some danger, but not complete danger.
The only danger was that they wanted to see me jump in front of the train. So there's one shot in the movie, which they did not tell me this was going to happen, but they got away with it. But there's a scene where I actually pull up in front of the road and I jump and you see me come out of the camera and Peter McDonald's sitting there watching it. He's behind the camera, Donner, Salkind, all of them are there. And you see me swing out of frame and the train's going 50 miles an hour down the track. There's one shot in that movie and Richard Hackman, Gene Hackman's brother, grabbed me because I was swinging back into the train.
Oh.
And I would have been killed.
Oh.
Yep, true story.
Wow.
And Richard Hackman saved my life.
A whole different way of filmmaking back then.
Yeah, it was old-fashioned way of making movies.
Yeah.
And everybody was worried about it.
Worried about going into it or worried that after it happened?
Worried, how are you going to do it? How are you going to do it without killing somebody?
You pulled it off. Well, everyone involved pulled it off, and you sell it, that's for sure. We have to mention, you talk about the train, two of the folks on the train, Kirk Allen and Noel Neal. Did you get a chance to meet them while you were filming?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They were up there for a month.
Okay. The original Superman, the original Lois Lane.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a very unique publicity moment. And
yeah.
It was fun. I love Noel. Noel's a great person.
She is.
Kirk's was a great guy. And Noel's a lot of fun to talk to and all about Superman and all that stuff. But
did Kirk give you any like Superman advice? Like, hey,
no,
okay,
no,
just let you do
your
thing.
Nobody was trying to give me any advice. I was just trying to be myself.
They're just trying to swing in from a train. That's all.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. I mentioned this movie 78. So I'm 11 when I'm watching this. And it's interesting. I'm watching this. I thought, wow, they really got an actor that looked just like Christopher Reeve, that sounds just like Christopher Reeve,
yeah,
that has the same hair as Christopher. Look, I'm 11, so give me a break at the time. I'm like, wow.
Jeez, that guy's really good at
that guy. They must have looked. Reeve. They look forever to find this guy. Okay. I'm a little older now and I can look back. Okay. You have blonde, curly hair.
Yep.
Your nose is not the same as Christopher Reeve's nose.
No.
Back then. Okay. No. So tell our listeners.
My voice is not the same as Christopher Reeve.
Now, did you, okay, did you, when did you find out that Christopher Reeve came in and dubbed your voice?
The premiere of the film.
Oh. So you're watching it and it's all of a sudden.
It was, wow. You want to hear the story? This is a great story.
Yeah, yeah.
I get a phone call. I'm in Hollywood. I was not even invited to the premiere of the film, which was on the East Coast, Washington, D.C., Kennedy Center. Then it was in New York City. It was a big deal. Warner Brothers made a big deal about it. And I knew that was going to happen. I was like, that's cool. I didn't care, dude. It was Christopher Reeve's movie, whatever. I'm just a part of it. I'm glad to be a part of it. And I really didn't care. But a friend of mine, Mark McClure, who played Jimmy Olsen, calls me up. And I'm laying in bed, and I'm in Hollywood, and I'm like, hey, what's going on, Mark? And he goes, hey, man, I'm in Washington, D.C. He goes, I just want to give you a heads up. Your voice has been dubbed.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, what? And this is before the movie is even released. And I'm going, what are you talking about?
Yeah, because they had a couple of premieres ahead of time, and then there was the national release.
And I go, well, they dubbed my voice. That's interesting. Who dubbed my voice? He goes, Chris. And I went, oh, that son of a... And I knew at that time that Chris had had some problems with me even playing the role. And I thought, well, Chris, I said, Donner wants me to play this role. I mean, we spent a lot of time in London together and going back and forth about characterization and about the way I looked and about my mannerisms. And I mean, he was very particular about the way I played this role. And I find out later that he wanted to play that role. He was dying to play that role. And Donner kept saying, no, you can't. I have to have a young guy play this. You're older. You're not going to play the young Clark Kent. And Reeve was pissed off about that. And I go, why would he be pissed off about that? I mean, this is, you know, it became this big ordeal. But I had no idea that he would loop my voice. And without asking me or even telling me.
So was there animosity between you and Christopher Reeve at the time?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I was mad. And I told Donner, I said, that's BS. And all this stuff that was going on with Donner and the Salkinds and them firing him and Richard Lester became the director on Superman 2. All that came into play with him looping my voice. And so Donner felt bad about it. And he said, I apologize, kid. I had no idea. And I said, well, I don't believe that. And it turns out that the producers made that choice. And Christopher Reeve made that choice because he was so involved with them that he said, it doesn't make any sense that his voice sounds like someone else. And I guess I have a very, I don't know, distinctive voice, whatever it may be. And that's possibly, you know, I was going, you know, that makes sense. I understand you want it to be Superman. You don't want it to be Superman. Yeah. It's Superman. And I went with it. And I said, okay, I can deal with that. But the fact that they didn't tell me that they were going to do it really bothered me. And Donner, of course, years later, had me in for Inside Moves. He brought me in for Scrooge. He brought me in for any film project he was working on. Except for Lethal Weapon. Thanks, Dick.
Could have got a franchise out of that, huh?
Yeah.
But well, at least he tried to make it up to you over the years. But and the good thing is you can kind of go on and see some of these deleted scenes that you're in and compare for yourself. Because it does, because Chris only did what's in the movie, what's in the actual cut. So there's some stuff out there of you as Clark Kent. So we can compare and contrast all these years later. So
thanks
to the internet, thanks to DVDs and Blu-rays, you're back.
And it's cool. You know what?
You're back.
It is what it is. And I think people talk about it, which is funny. It's still talked about to this day because of that.
That's funny. And we mentioned the nose.
How ironic is that?
Well, we mentioned the nose, too, because you had, like, a prosthetic nose, too, to kind of match his.
Oh, dude, that whole scene with Glenn Ford that we did the one take on?
Yes.
They did a shot prior to that with me running up the road, and the dust thing hit me in the face. So Stuart Freeborn, the makeup artist, had to redo my makeup on the set. And my nose completely turned blue. And if you watch the movie in a big screen, 70 millimeter in the theaters, you see my nose. It's blue.
Yeah.
It looks like somebody hit me in the face.
There's a couple shots, and I have seen it since then in the theater, you know, back again. And it's, if you're looking right at it, there's a little difference. Yeah. So.
Yes.
Another little interesting thing. Now, you, again, coming in, these scenes are being shot late. You went from there to London, the 007 stage.
Yep.
And then you were shooting. I mean, talk about that massive set for the Fortress of Solitude.
That's cool.
And you shot there forever, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, how boring that was.
It's just you.
Oh, it's ridiculously boring.
It's the Fortress of Solitude. So, like,
I know, but, dude, it was so boring. And I had so much fun with all my English friends and all my English crew. And it's just me and that stupid green thing I'm throwing. And it's all special effects. It's the most boring work you could ever do.
Yeah.
And that was the beginning of CGI. That was literally the threshold of CGI, because that was the first time they ever did an effect like that. And all I was doing is throwing stuff all day long. And I'm making looks, and Donner's going, "Look serious, Jeff." I'm like, "Shut up." You know, it's like, what? Put the wig on better or whatever. Put your nose on better.
Yeah.
We were laughing. I mean, I spent months doing these ridiculous shots. And all it was CGI. And nowadays, that's how they make movies. I can't imagine working on a movie right now.
Yeah, because all you're doing is flinging that one crystal, and it's going over and over again. Yeah, but if you had to do the whole thing.
You know, looking serious and, you know.
Now, there's one thing I have to ask about, because when you go in, there's the backpack, and you kind of open it up, and you see the material in there. Is the concept that the Fortress created the suit based on the material that you had from the ship?
Yes.
Okay. Because that's not the suit in there.
No. Well, it's the elements of it.
Right. Ma Kent didn't make the suit.
No.
Okay.
Now, that might be comic book lore, but Donner told me that the elements of the whole suit, the elements of Superman, he's created himself. It's all about the crystal and builds this thing. There's elements of it in that backpack.
Okay. Just want to make sure we got that, because you see that.
But now, I think it's comic book lore. There might be more to it than I'm telling you.
It's comic book lore. And Lois and Clark, Ma Kent makes the suit. But in Donner's world and in your world, the Fortress makes it.
Yeah. That's what Donner was telling me.
Okay.
And I went on him. I mean, he was an expert on it, so I was like, okay, cool.
Yep, we buy it. We buy it. Now, there's shots of Christopher Reeve acting alongside Marlon Brando in The Fortress. Now, were you with Christopher Reeve in The Fortress at all, or did any of that cross over?
Oh, yeah. I was with Chris a lot.
Were you with Brando at all?
No.
Okay, so he was already gone by that time.
He's gone.
Okay. Now, okay, so working with Chris, so is there animosity between
that? It's funny that you asked that. It's funny you asked that. Margot Kidder flew over from Los Angeles with me, and I'd already been cast, and she was testing for Lois Lane, and we flew together. She flew in first class, and they screwed my ticket up, and I was in economy, and I sent her a little message. Good luck on your test tomorrow, Superman. And she laughed. She goes, that's the funniest thing I've ever gotten from an actor. And it's true, though. I did that. And I was already cast in the movie. And I'm flying coach. And she's flying in first class. And it was hilarious. And I made fun of it. And we had dinner that next night. And we talked about it. But she was marvelous as Lois Lane. Unbelievable.
It's, I mean, and everything hits.
Stalker Channing is a friend of mine. She was testing at the same time. Brilliant as Lois Lane. Margot Kidder was better. And a better actress, a better choice, a better person. I mean, it was all hit on all levels. And Donner wanted that kind of weird. Margot's got this weird kind of a salty earth mother type thing going for her. She's not a typical Hollywood actress. She's really different. And I think that was one of her problems. She never could get out of that because Hollywood is so vicious and Hollywood is so, you got to be a certain way. But Margot was such a brilliant actress. It still is. And I can't imagine anybody else playing that role.
Yeah.
And no. I remember the night we had dinner, and it was right outside of Shepperton Studios, Warren upon the Thames, and we were both staying in the same hotel, and we just talked about being an actor and how hard it is and blah, 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 how nervous she was. But yet she seemed so calm, and I knew she was going to get the part. I knew it. I knew it when I met her.
Yeah, it's one of these movies where like all the right people came together at all the right at the right time for all the right scenes. Everything works amazingly. And I have to ask, you know, we don't want to leave it with people thinking like you and Christopher Reeve are like at each other's throats all the time. Like you did make up afterwards.
Oh yeah,
right?
Oh yeah, Chris. Oh my God, I raised money for his foundation and his kids and I and I. You know, Christopher and I were good friends, and I don't have any animosity towards Christopher at all. And, but I can't be dishonest either.
Yeah.
And say we didn't have our issues, because that would be lying.
You're as honest as Jack O'Halloran was in his interview as well.
Pretty much.
Yeah, Chris was method.
Chris and I did not get along, and it was for a number of reasons. And I started justifying it, going, this is why, and I understand, and it makes sense.
Yeah.
Even to this day, I go, it makes sense. You know, if I was a studio backing a $50 million project, I would say, shut up. Just be the actor and shut up.
Yeah. Well, it could have been worse. I mean, didn't Hitchcock call actors cattle?
Pretty much.
So yeah, I mean, it could be worse. at least Donner gave you some movie parts after that too. So you know, it's amazing. You see all the turmoil and you hear all these crazy stories, and then you look back and it's like, it all works. It all just works. And your performance, I have to say, is just when you see the shots with when Pa Kent dies and when you're leaving Ma the last time, those are just golden. Those are just absolutely golden. So kudos to you.
Well, we got lucky. Thank you. That we got really.
Well,
it's
more than that. There's more than that. There's a lot of talent coming together, and you guys hit all the right parts on that too.
Well, I appreciate you telling me that.
Oh man, no worries. Your thoughts on some of the newer Superman projects that we see coming out here?
Wow. Why?
Why do I want your opinion, or why are we doing them?
Why are they doing them?
Yeah.
Wow. I saw actually Man of Steel, and I liked it. And I saw it in France, and I was at a drive-in in Monaco. I wasn't even in France. I was in Monaco. And Prince Albert has this drive-in theater in his little country that he has. And it's really interesting. My wife and I went to see it. And I got to tell you, I liked the movie. But it wasn't Superman.
Okay, yeah, I can give you that. Yeah.
It bothered me. I was like, God, I really like this movie. It's really fun to watch and really interesting, but this is not Superman. I don't think you can redo what they did. I really don't think it should be done again. There would be different versions of it, but Donner's version of Superman stands alone, in my opinion. Not because I'm in it. Not because, I'm just telling you, and I've given all these guys credit for filmmaking and the way they make movies and fantastic work and these great looking guys and great looking actors and really interesting characters. I don't think they're ever going to make a movie like Superman or Gone with the Wind or Casablanca. Or do I need to go on?
No, I mean, you're not going to get a disagreement out of me. I mean, I view this as the gold standard. I still think it's the greatest film score of all time by John Williams. We mentioned him as well. And when you hear his music under your scenes, you just melt, man. That's just
that's pretty good stuff.
That's gold stuff right there. So you're not going to get a disagreement on me. I can watch these films, and hey, that's cool. But hey, that's Superman to me is your movie. So I love that one. Hey,
thank you.
Let's talk about what you got going on today. A little bit of real estate action going on. What's up with that?
No, actually, I'm completely out of the real estate game.
Okay, well, I don't know, because Lex Luthor always talks about real estate, so you know, maybe.
Well, I'm buying real estate, but I'm not selling it. Okay. I'm buying it. We're, you know, me and Otis are trying to make Nevada the next, you know, Sea View address for all of Nevada. No, actually, I'm living in France. I married a French girl who I fell in love with, and very happy. I am currently doing a number of plays all throughout Europe. I'm doing stage. I'm back into the theater. I have a production company. We've got many projects in the works for, you know, television, theatrical release, stuff, scripts that I've owned, that scripts that I bought. But mainly I'm just concentrating on my theatrical career, theatrical acting, just doing what I really want to do is be an actor. And I don't want to be a movie star. I don't want to be a celebrity. It's not my deal. And I just like being an actor and making people happy and laugh. I love to make people laugh. And I'm doing some comedies here in Nice, France. Doing some Panthos, one Cinderella, which is hilarious. I'm literally playing a woman in the film.
Okay.
Not the film, but the show, theatrical show. It's the best part I've ever had since Superman.
Wow.
I'm playing the Baroness, playing Cinderella's stepmother, which is friggin' hilarious and fun to do.
Well, and the thing
I
about
get to
the
wear
stage,
wigs and dresses and put on bras. And
you don't have a fake nose again, do you?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope.
No prosthetics.
But I have a beard.
Okay. Well, the thing about a play is that you get that immediate feedback from the audience, so you interaction.
Oh, dude, it's the best. There's nothing like it.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Film acting is boring compared to this. Boring.
Well, and you're right where 16-year-old Jeff East wanted to be.
You got it.
That's amazing. And a Superman the movie reunion coming up. Is that?
That's what I heard.
Okay, yeah, are you a part of this?
April.
Okay.
Yep.
What's do you have details on that?
It's going to be in Anaheim, and it's going to be they're going to try and introduce a coffee table book. All the stills from Superman. Jim Bowers is involved with this. He's a great guy. He's one of the greatest collectors of Superman memorabilia, and I think that's the first week of April. In Anaheim at the convention center.
Yeah, we'll put the link up in the show notes. Do you know who all is going to be there?
Everybody that's alive. We're still alive.
We're all still there. You're not going to dent your movie.
Everybody that's alive will be there.
Okay. I think we got Margot Kidder. I think we've got an even younger Clark Kent than you. We got baby Clark. Like toddler.
They're bringing in the baby.
Yeah, Aaron.
God, he's still alive.
Got the little toddler Clark. We got all kinds of Clarks coming in. We got all kinds of Supermans coming in. They're all going to be there. We'll put the information on there. You're on social media. Are you on Twitter? How can folks find out more about you?
Facebook. I'm on Facebook. Jeffrey East. I'm on Facebook. I love Facebook. I love talking to people. And I like hearing from Superman fans.
He'll friend you. He'll talk to you. He'll tell you great stories about Superman. Jeff, I'm telling you what, this film, as I mentioned, remains the gold standard for comic book films. And that goes to these performances and the direction and the music and everything that's involved in it. It's amazing. I thank you for your part in the Superman legacy. And I thank you for joining me here today on Comic Book Central.
Thank you, my friend.
I mentioned at the top of the show the website capedwonder.com. You heard Jeff talk about the upcoming Superman reunion. That's going to be at WonderCon in Anaheim, California, April 3rd through the 5th. To find out more about the convention, check out comic-con.org/WCA. Check that out. You get some more information. Jim Bowers and the folks at capedwonder.com, they're going to be hosting the reunion event. I'm going to put links up to the show in the show notes at my website, comicbookcentral.net. The event, at this point, it looks like it's going to include a couple of my guests here on Comic Book Central, Jack O'Halloran and Mark McClure. So if you're in attendance, be sure to tell them Joe from Comic Book Central sent you. I mentioned Diane Sherry Case in the show as well. She played Lana Lang. She's scheduled to attend. Margot Kidder, Sarah Douglas, Valerie Perrine, Aaron Smolinski, Making of Superman the Movie author David Petrow, he's scheduled to attend as well. So check the convention floor. Maybe you can snag a copy of the book and get him to sign it. How cool would that be? I wish I could be there. I can't make it to the event, but it does sound like it's going to be an amazing time there. So to all of those attending, have fun. Enjoy reliving Superman the Movie. And big thanks to Jeff East today for helping me relive that movie today. I really enjoyed that. I mentioned our website, comicbookcentral.net. That's where you're going to find out everything you need to know about the episodes broadcast here from the Lair. Be sure to check out Comic Book Central on Facebook as well. Thanks to everyone who's been giving us new likes lately. Facebook.com/Comic Book Central Network. Share the Lair and follow Comic Book Central on Twitter at ComicBookCTRL. Subscribe to the show on iTunes. You're going to get all those great Superman-themed episodes. Be sure to leave a review if you like what you're hearing. I really appreciate that. And I want to hear from you. Drop me a line, joe@comicbookcentral.net, or click the Signal Me tab on the website at comicbookcentral.net. Speaking of emails, I did get a couple of messages delivered to me by Virtual Willie Lumpkin. It was always nice to see him stopping by the Lair. From the Facebook page, Tyler Patrick wrote in. Tyler says, I wanted to say I love the show. I am a really big Superman fan, and that's how I found your podcast. I love all the interviews you do. I want to know if you could get Tom Welling on your show. I feel with the Superman craze and comic book TV shows, Smallville keeps getting forgotten. It did so much for comics and TV, and Tom hasn't received as much credit as Superman recently. I feel the same for Brandon Routh. He had the short end of the Superman stick, but now he's the Atom. Just thought I'd ask and can't wait to hear the next episode. Well, thanks for writing in, Tyler. Glad you're enjoying the show. I hope you enjoyed today's episode with the younger version of Clark Kent, Jeff East. Speaking of young Clark, I couldn't agree with you more about Tom Welling. And I'm a huge fan of Smallville. It definitely did a lot to get us where we are with the explosion of comic book movies and TV shows today. Rest assured, that show is certainly not forgotten here at Comic Book Central. I'm sure you know already going past through some of those back episodes, but if you haven't yet, be sure to check out my interview with Lex Luthor from Smallville, Michael Rosenbaum, Episode 2. Dean Cain was on Episode 22. He made a guest appearance on Smallville. Mark McClure, I mentioned, he played Daxer on Smallville. Helen Slater, Supergirl, she's Episode 35. She played Tom Welling's Kryptonian mom, Lara. Eric Johnson joined me on Episode 58. He played Lana's boyfriend. And of course, last week's Episode 61 with Smallville's Aquaman, Alan Richson. And to answer your other question, I would love to include an episode of Comic Book Central with Tom Welling and Brandon Routh, for that matter. I will say this, they are both very busy gentlemen, so as you would expect, it's not always easy to slow Superman down for a chat. But rest assured, Stuberman is doing his very best for you listeners, so stay tuned to Comic Book Central. And next up, I heard from Ed Dalesta, producer and host of The IndieCast. It's the world's number one Indiana Jones podcast. You can find it over at theindiecast.com. Ed writes, "Hey, Joe, just wanted to say I've been binge listening to Comic Book Central to catch up. Now that I'm back to my regular commute, I can get a chance to get my fix. The Howard the Duck, Flash Gordon episodes have been great, though, boy, I hated the 2007 series. I would have been interested in what they thought of the final film. I've also been trying to get that Flash Gordon commentary DVD for years. Cheers. Hey, cheers to you as well, Ed. Great to hear from you. And I promise Keith Voss and I will return to the IndyCast soon. I always appreciate you allowing us time on the podcast to talk about indie comics. So we will make a return very soon. Listeners, I thought I might hear from Ed after the Flash Gordon episode because that's one of Ed's favorite films. You know, I think Sam Jones said it best on the show. He said, Flash Gordon is the movie you watch. You get a big bucket of popcorn. You sit back, you relax, and enjoy the ride. He loved the film. I love the film. Ed loves the film. We all love the film. So, yeah, that's one of those ones. Just check it out. It is a fun ride. And speaking of Flash Gordon, be sure to check out lifeafterflash.com. It's a new documentary in the works about Sam and Flash Gordon and a bunch of other stuff. They're on Facebook. Go give them a like and be sure to tell them Comic Book Central sent ya. I'll put the links up in the show notes. All right, funny book fans, that's it for today. I've got a train to catch at super speed, but I will be back in the lair in no time at all because next week on Comic Book Central, I'm going to take a look at the show that gave us three, count them, three superheroes fighting crime in New Gotham. The show was Birds of Prey, and my guest next week, one of the stars of that show, she played Dinah Lance. It's actress Rachel Skarsgård. That's next week. Until then, stay super. Keep reading those comics. Thanks for joining me here in the lair, Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. This podcast is intended for entertainment and education purposes only. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivations 3.0 Unported License. All of the content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of their respective holders.
Lana, don't bother with these, huh? I'll take them in with the other equipment.
Thank you, Clark.
Sure.
I think you're the nicest guy in the whole school.
Thanks. Of course, it's part of the job, being team manager and all. But I'd do it for you anyway.